Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the web, Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures from entertainment and general pop culture. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
A powerful Sith you will become.
We'll be right back.
I would like to welcome you all to another edition of the hottest show on the East Coast, the Midnight Black Mass. I am your host, the Ghastly Ghoul of Appalachia, also known as the Devil You Know, and the Maniacal Minister of the Occult, the Reverend Dan Wilson, here to bring you another edition of all of the best in media on the fringe. I got a big show tonight, no special guests, but the Rev's been hard at work for you and has lined up several special guests for the next couple of months. We're going to have a real interesting time. Not going to let the cat out of the bag on any of those just yet. Going to save that one for you. There at the top of the show, you heard some classic metal, first of all, in the first two tracks, taking a trip across the pond to Great Britain for the fantastic heavy metal movement that had been perpetrated over there. Back to 1981 first for Iron Maiden with Killers, off of the album of the same name, the classic Iron Maiden, their second release, considered by many diehard Maiden fans to be their best album. Certainly, on any given day, it could be mine, depending on my mood. I really can't pick a favorite Iron Maiden album. That's like asking somebody to pick your favorite child. Then after that, you heard Judas Priest, with Pain and Pleasure, off of quite possibly their most heavily successful album. It was right up there at the top. British Steel may have also been in the running, but that was off. I tell you, Rev is back, folks. I do apologize for the technical difficulties. Sprint is really pissing me off right about now. We've never had connection issues here from the compound at the Midnight Black Mass, and all of a sudden tonight, it seems like there are plenty. I've dropped about 11 calls trying to get in initially to our switchboard there, and funny thing about it that we normally only play the two songs to start it. The third song was Typo Negative with We Hate Everyone off the 1993 album Bloody Kisses. And due to the issues we're having, we're actually going to jump right ahead before I get to my wrestling plug, before I get to the news, before I get to anything else. And we're going to bring on the great Muji for the Muji Movie Minute as we have a big movie here called The Rise of Leslie Vernon Behind the Mask. It's the Muji Movie Minute. And we're back here this week for another edition, digging up the best and the worst of horror cinema from the compound and beyond. Muji, how are you doing tonight, my brother?
Doing good, doing good.
Fantastic. Well, what did you have for us this week?
Yeah, like you said, we got the Behind the Mask, the Rise of Leslie Vernon, just a movie that, you know, we found skimming through Netflix. It's from 2006. It is directed by a guy named Scott Glosserman, who wrote and directed it. He's done nothing else you've ever heard of, but it's a movie that's basically, there wasn't a lot, the premise of the movie and stuff was, it's actually cool. On the Netflix, it didn't really tell you exactly what was going on, so we kind of went into it, you know, just watching. The gimmick is that there's a guy going by the name of Leslie Vernon who has a documentary crew following him. He's showing them an inside look into the life of a serial killer. And it's kind of a comedy. It's kind of serious. Basically, all the characters in the movie live in a world where Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, all the famous serial killers from movies all really existed. And then this guy, Leslie Vernon, is being followed around by this crew because they believe he's going to be like the next really famous one. They somehow contacted him, and they're going around just basically, he shows them how he prepares to set people up for kills, everything like that. And it turned out to be really, really entertaining. At first, it was, you know, because we didn't know what was happening. It was a little, you know, a little hesitant because, of, you know, you're kind of like, what? What's going on? But then as the movie goes on, you know, if you're a big fan of horror movies, you know, this is actually something that I would recommend you don't miss. It's you know, super entertaining throughout the movie. He's really smart. They, you know, they kind of, when he talks about when he's going to, like, stalk people and how he's going to do it, you know, it's all classic stuff from horror movies that he talks about. There's all sorts of crazy little cameos in the movie, not just by the bit characters are played by famous horror people. Obviously, you've got, Zelda Rubinstein is in it, the old little lady from Poltergeist. She's in the movie. Robert Englund's in the movie. And then there's also a bunch of little cameos in the movie, like we're in one scene, they're in the background, you can see the box from Hellraiser just sitting on a table, just all sorts of crazy little stuff like that. And I thought it was, you know, really, really entertaining.
Yes, I agreed wholeheartedly with that. It was a very unique horror flick in that it did the found footage style documentary, but spliced that with a more theatrical looking version. Basically, you got the inside track from Leslie Vernon when he was setting up all of the various kills and his locales and his atmospheres, but then when it came time to put those into place, then, of course, the type of shot that was used changed, the type of camera changed, and it became very cinematic looking. I thought that was a nice effect, the way they used that. I loved the story overall, and it was very tongue-in-cheek in reference to the slasher genre, but in that same respect, as you said, Muji, if you are a fan of the slasher genre, very many inside jokes with a great deal of appeal to anyone who's a diehard fan of horror. What did you give it in the ratings department?
Yeah, I gave it a 62% well done. I thought it was, you know, it was entertaining. There were parts of the movie that failed a little bit, I think, when it actually came time to where he was actually going to kill somebody and when he was stalking the people, like, I didn't think it really translated from, like, kind of the tongue-in-cheek and the funny stuff to getting scary, like I think the movie intended for it to do. There was also times when, like you said, when they actually flipped from the documentary style to this is the scene, this is what's going to happen, I guess maybe just because of the feel of the movie or something, it just, you know, felt like it was less, like they were doing the tongue-in-cheek and the documentary style much better than the actual when he was stalking somebody. But I thought, like I said, I thought it was super, super entertaining. Everybody in the movie was good. The main guy, Nathan Basile, who played Leslie Vernon, was really entertaining in the movie. He was really, really funny. And the cast of the mood of the movie, it's, like I said, it's, you know, if you're a huge fan of horror, you know, you kind of get everything. I can see somebody who's not a big horror movie fan might find the movie kind of silly or pointless, but it's almost like for smart marks for horror movies is who the movie was made for. I mean, like when he's talking, he's got an older guy in the movie that is like an old serial killer, and it's kind of his mentor that is played by Scott Wilson, who is on The Walking Dead, plays Herschel. He's cool, and they're just kind of sitting around joking around about like the things they do to go about stalking people and killing them, just like, you know, me and you would joke around about, you know, watching a wrestling match or something like that, you know, so.
Right.
It's definitely really entertaining. They're actually looked into it. There's actually supposed to be a sequel coming out to it this year. So it would, you know, I think that'll be worth checking out if it actually does come out.
I'm optimistic for that. And so next week, what do we have on tap for the Muji Movie Minute? You know,
yeah, next week we'll put a little more effort into obtaining a good copy. We're going this week, but our copy was terrible. But we'll be checking out Fright Night next week, or if for some reason that becomes impossible, we'll go ahead and check out Hostel 3.
Excellent. Well, both sound like choice encounters. I'm looking forward to the newer genre of horror movies that have come out. You know, I normally don't care for the new horror films, but there have been a couple of pleasant surprises. And honestly, like my opinion, the Fright Night trailer did not look too appealing to me. But people that I wouldn't have expected to have loved that movie said they did. So I'm going to go into it with a very open mind and hope to be highly entertained.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it could be, you know, sometimes those movies turn out, you know, it could turn out to be, you know, The Thing 2, which everybody loved and we loved, or it could turn out to be Insidious, where everybody just overlooked the fact that part of it sucked. But we'll find out soon enough.
Yes, the truth will be told in the viewings. Well, Muji, thank you again for joining us for another edition of the Muji Movie Minute, and we'll see you next week, my brother.
See ya.
All right, that was the Muji Movie Minute reviewing The Rise of Leslie Vernon Behind the Mask from 2006. Going to go on to the music news right now. Of course, things we got coming up. Let me go ahead and do that first, get that out of the way. First of all, for the Rev himself, I will be appearing live at Empire Pro Wrestling in Rossville, Georgia, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock p.m. You want to go on Facebook, you can search them right there in your toolbar, Empire Pro Wrestling. They will come up, and the Rev and the Devil Rejects have been wreaking havoc and raising all sorts of ungodly amount of hell in Rossville, Georgia. And tomorrow night will be no exception. January 20th, 2012, that's a Friday night at 8 o'clock p.m., NWA Chattanooga returns to Soddy Daisy Middle School in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee. The Rev will be there in the main event, managing the Deadly Sin 7, 320-plus pounds of him against the Strong Style Psycho Tank. Both men attached at the neck with 10-foot log and chain. It will be a dog collar match, and only the strongest will survive. And also on that card, you've got a big NWA North American Championship bout. The Temptation, Sean Tempers, will take on Patrick Bentley in a 2-out-of-3 falls match. We've got a big 4-way contenders bout. Number one contenders, shot of their choice match, featuring Brian Casanova, Andrew Alexander, Kyle Matthews, and Jesco Blue, and the Scenic City Hall of Fame, honoring professional wrestling legends who will be in the house. Now, we're talking about Rock and Roll, Ricky Morton, one half of the Rock and Roll Express, a worldwide NWA Hall of Famer, Pat Rose, a former Southeastern star, all over the circuit, every major territory in the Southeast. You can bet Pat Rose was there. And one of the most famous female wrestlers of all time, the legendary Joyce Grable. That's live Friday night, 8 o'clock p.m., Soddy Daisy Middle School, NWA Chattanooga. Go to www.nwachattanooga.com for details. And now we will move along to the music news before kicking some more tunes out for you. I want to talk about the show Metal Evolution. Bring on VH1 Classic. The Rev has been thoroughly entertained by that. Very in-depth look, many different genres of metal. I did have some beefs with the thrash episode that they kind of glossed over the importance, in my opinion, of death and black metal, but a small complaint, really, in the overall scheme of things. And the glam metal episode was fascinating, just a fascinating look into the Sunset Strip Los Angeles in the 1980s, and that entire environment really sucked you in and gave you a mental picture of what it was like at that time for those of us who were not there, like myself. And so Metal Evolution, they're airing a lot of the previous episodes, actually, on VH1Classic.com right now in their entirety. So you want to head over there and check those out if you're a fan of metal. Very, very in-depth look. Interview from a lot of guys that you probably haven't heard from in many years, from a lot of bands. So very, very highly recommended. Big news is that Van Halen is embarking on another reunion tour with, of course, all of the original band, but Michael Anthony on bass with Eddie's son Wolfgang playing bass instead. Big U.S. tour. Looks like they're going to be hitting all the major cities and right here around the compound in the Command Central for the Midnight Black Mass. There's a Nashville and an Atlanta date. The Rev's going to do everything I can to make it out to the Van Halen reunion tour and give you guys a report on it. They actually have a new album coming out called A Different Kind of Truth. A new single from that called Tattoo comes out next Tuesday, the 10th. We will try to get our hands on that for you. So Van Halen, good to see one of the legendary bands back together, despite the circumstances without Michael Anthony, a lot of controversy there. But, you know, I don't know what to think of that myself. I'm not close enough to the situation, quite honestly. But moving on, apparently Howard Jones, vocalist for Peel Switch Engage, has left the band, citing health reasons, actually, and has parted on good terms with Killswitch Engage members, and that's a good thing to hear. And rock and roll, man, you know, you get so much invested into it emotionally. Any art form that you express yourself in, intentions can run high, and a lot of times you see bands like one of my all-time favorites, Pantera, the living members, you know, they don't speak to each other anymore. So good to see that the guy had to leave the band. They did all part on good terms, and they're wishing him the best and vice versa. Got some big albums coming up in January. The 24th seems to be a consensus giant album release date. We've got Scorpions with a new studio album, sort of. It actually won't be any new songs, but it will be new recordings. They will be re-recording many of their classics, and half of the album will also feature cover versions of 60s and 70s early popular rock songs. Will be released by Sony Entertainment and will be available in both CD and vinyl formats. Vinyl making a big comeback these days. Also, you've heard on the show the single Ghost Walking off of this album coming up, Resolution by Lamb of God, also going to be released on January 24th. We're all very much looking forward to that. And Bruce Dickinson's son's band, you heard Iron Maiden earlier in the hour, his son's band Rise to Remain will have an album called City of Vultures dropping on January 24th. So that's a good day to be a metal fan. A lot of good music coming out. Over to comic book news just very briefly before we get some more tunes out at you, and then we'll be back later. Got a Revs rant. Discussing my feeling on politics, and I don't like to discuss that very often, but I'm going to break it down for you here tonight and give my exclusive opinions on how I feel really about politics. A lot of people ask me my political opinions. I normally try to stay out of it, but you're actually going to hear some tonight. In lieu of a guest, I'm a blab. Ain't that grand, the internet, and hosting your own show where you can bitch all day. And that's exactly what we need, is more people bitching on the internet. But comic book news, things that I'm excited about. February 16th on AMC Network, a show called Comic Book Men about Kevin Smith's comic book store in New Jersey. The Secret Stash will be premiering. It's a reality show, basically Pawn Stars meets Comic-Con, supposedly, is what we're being told is the theme. I've had basically a look into the comic collecting subculture, and it will premiere following the return of Walking Dead on Sunday, February the 16th. You want to check that out. The Marvel Comics has announced AVX, an unprecedented tie-in to their next big event, the Avengers versus the X-Men. Two of the super teams in comics going to collide with only one standing tall. And what this AVX tie-in is extended illustrations, very minimal dialogue, extended illustrations of battle scenes. So it's a direct response to the fans who've cried for more action. They're going to give it to you not only in the main comic, Avengers versus X-Men, but also this AVX tie-in. It's going to be very detailed battle scenes, and that should be very cool. Marvel actually topped the overall sales for the month of December, but DC Comics ruled the top 10. So comics are seeming to be jumping slightly out of their recession due to the popularity of the DC New 52 relaunch and the Marvel comic films that are dominating the box office. Justice League number one, talking about the DC comics, has sold 360,000 copies in 4 months, which in this day and age, the digital world we live in, that's a pretty damned impressive number. Sad news in that we hear that Comic-Con co-founder Richard Alf has passed away at the age of 59. And another slightly not really comic-related bit of news, but I don't have much in the way of television news today. I'm going to throw this in here since it appeals to the same demographic. Community is not being canceled, at least today, according to the NBC chairman, and that's from comicbookresources.com. So all the fans who had voiced their concerns that the Community, hilarious show on NBC about a group of slackers and a study group at community college, and very much appealing to the nerd demographic, maybe even more so than Big Bang Theory and shows like that. And there was a lot of worry that because of their ratings, they were going to get canceled. But the vocal minority has spoken, and they will be keeping Community on the air. Well, we talked about the Scorpions coming out with that new album of re-recordings, so I felt it apropos to bless your ears with a little bit of the legendary Scorpions off of the 1979 album Love Drive. This song's called Another Piece of Meat.
You play.
Love Drive. That is German metal pioneers, the Scorpions, one of the greatest acts I've ever seen live in concert. I got to catch them last year on their retirement tour in Atlanta, Georgia. 'Twas an experience I will never forget. And I mentioned that we would be taking some callers tonight for the first time. That is, in actually was going to be in regards to the political discussion later, but we have a caller on the line now, and I'd like to welcome him to the show. My boy, the human hand grenade, Danny Only, one half of the Hate Junkies. Danny, my man, how are you?
Oh, man, I tell you what, Uncle Dan, I can't complain at all. Not right now, anyway.
Excellent. Well, how's things been going in my absence down there at NWA Anarchy? I know we've kept up, and I've handled business affairs from the comfort of the compound. But, you know, we haven't had a lot of time to sit down and talk. So how are they treating you? Are you being begrudged against? Are they oppressing you? Are they holding you down? What is the man doing to the Hate Junkies?
Well, I know it's no mystery to anybody that, you know, we came up a little bit short in the Hangman's match against the Urban Assault Squad. We took it to them, and unfortunately, they were just a little bit better that night. You know, and I'm not going to take anything away from them. We gave them boys everything that we could, and they took everything, and they gave it back to us. But in the same respect, they had the same thing to say about us. You know, they actually said that they have never been in there with anybody who brought it as hard as the Hate Junkies did. And I think that goes without saying that anybody, you know, who gets in the ring with us, they're in for the fight of their life. Like I said, unfortunately, came up a little bit short. They threw us both over the rope, their ropes around our necks. They won, we lost, but oh well. You know, we're not gonna sit by and lick our wounds and cry about it. We went out, I pounded some beers, Strychnine drove me home, and you know, tomorrow's a new day. You know, 2012, it's a whole new year. And I got a feeling that when you come back that we're going to have a few surprises for you, and we got a whole new direction to go that's going to keep us definitely entertained for a little while.
Well, you know, one of the constant themes of professional wrestling in media of all types of entertainment, really, is evolution. You've got to consistently evolve. I've reinvented myself many times over. And will continue to do so as necessary. I'll never deviate from being who I am, the Rev, deep down. But, you know, there's a time and a place where you got to sometimes catch a wave, brother, and you got to ride from that wave. And that's exactly what we've done with the Hate Junkies. When we first came on the scene, and then in 2011, you guys dominated the tag team scene in Georgia. You dominated every major promotion. You were on top in every major promotion. There was not a better tag team in the state of Georgia for my money in 2011 than the Hate Junkies. And the opponents that step in your path, they will feel the wrath. And it ain't going to be pretty, Danny. You know that.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny that you talk about that because, you know, I know with you being in the Georgia Wrestling History Network, you know, you kind of keep up with the way things have gone down. And, you know, they recently had the announcements for, you know, the year-end award. And I disagree with some, I agree with others. But the one thing that stood out was the fact that for most improved wrestler of 2011, Strychnine was the second runner-up. I disagree with that, not because I disagree with who won. I think Chip Day, you know, the scumbag that he is, he's definitely a quality wrestler, but I don't feel that Chip has improved the amount that Strychnine has over the past year.
Chip was really good, you know. Chip has been pretty good for a couple of years now. He's gotten a new bit of seasoning over the years. Like, Strychnine, a lot of people wrote him off as almost a backyarder, and this guy, he proved everybody's wrong, and he fucked a girlfriend at the same time.
That's the thing, and that, like I said, that's my argument. Without putting numbers on it, you know, I say that last year Chip Day was here, and this year he's a few inches above it, whereas Strychnine, you know, over the course of the past year has just you know, improve leaps and bounds. And actually, something that totally blew my mind is I had votes for Most Improved Wrestler of 2011, so that kind of shocked me. And
well,
I actually
you know, both of you.
Yeah, and I actually had votes for Wrestler of the Year for 2011, which I don't even know why people would vote for that, because I pretty much hate everybody that's out there, so who knows what that was about. And, you know, we came up short in Tag Team of the Year, but we were second runners-up in Tag Team of the Year for the state of Georgia. And, I, you know, we did everything that we could this year. You know, we came to NWA Chattanooga, and we beat ass. We went to Panama City and wrestled for the NWA World Tag Team titles. We beat ass at Anarchy. We beat ass in Rampage. We beat ass in TNT. So coming up a little bit short, I got to say it's a bitter pill to swallow. But 2012, I mean, we already have things in the works that is going to push our name beyond what anybody thought we could possibly do when you, in your genius mind, put us together 3 years ago.
Hey, you know, they sometimes call me a soothsayer in respect to that, because I know a good tag team when I see it, and you guys had chemistry, and we've exploded it, and it's been a great ride with a lot of success, and I hope them sons of bitches at NWA Anarchy will put my suspension sometime, oh, by Christmas maybe of next year, and I'll be back down there to lead you guys into victory once more. But anything else you want to get off your chest before we move on, Fritz?
Well, there's two things I got. One, I got a big fucking problem right now because I'm driving home and Johnny Law is on every single corner. I shit you not, have seen six cop cars pulling over people for probably nothing at all except driving late at night. And the second is I pose a kind of a riddle for you, because on the way home from every show Friday after I drop the boss off, I pass by this psychic's place and I just wonder, if I was to stop and jerk off on her porch, do you think she could see me coming?
Oh, I don't know. That's like a chicken or the egg type of riddle, huh? But, yeah, in relationship, before you go, in relationship to the Georgia Wrestling Awards, I'll say this. My opinion really shouldn't count, because I was selected to be on the panel, and they were due right about the time my daughter popped out. So in all the hustle and bustle that, I totally forgot. So I did not send a panel in. Therefore, I can't bitch too much because I had an opportunity to vote, and I didn't. But at least my opinion, the Hate Junkies were unparalleled the Tag Team of the Year, and you can take that to the bank, my friend.
Rock and roll. Well, I tell you what, I'm almost home. You have a good night. I'll be listening. Take care of yourself, and I'll see you soon.
All right, brother. Take it easy. We'll see you at Anarchy as soon as they lift the damn suspension.
Yeah, we're working on it.
Yeah, get to working faster.
Later on, brother.
All right, see ya. And that was one half of the Hate Junkies, the human hand grenade, Danny Only, taking a brief stop here on the Midnight Black Mass. I'm actually going to delve into a little bit of new ground before we get to the TV casualty segment of the show, where we look at Batman, the animated series. I want to talk a little bit about comedy. We have had a stand-up comedian previously on the show in the form of Patrick Brandmeier, and I am a big fan of stand-up comedy. Louis C.K., one of the funniest men I've ever heard in my entire life. I seriously am just blown away by this guy. He has such a grasp on the consciousness of the American public and what's going on in the world today. And to prove you can do it yourself, you know, a lot of people say that, well, you know, you've got to prove that you can do it yourself. And in the world of corporation, where record companies and major conglomerates run everything, so Louis C.K. has done just that. He put his own dime out there, and he produced this new special. He put it on his website. $5 a pop. He's already made over $1 million. That was in the first week. And I've seen this thing up on the torrent sites. I know people are illegally downloading. So this goes to show that all of this new laws for copyrights they're trying to push, maybe not so relevant, because it simply, to me, pushes the hand of quality. People will pay for something if it's good, and Louis C.K. has proven that. So as we talk about a little comedy, I thought I would start playing a couple of comedy segments for you, little stand-up comedy routines from my favorite comedians. This one is by a man named Doug Stanhope, who's out of Arizona, very funny, very bitter type comedian, very much on the bleak side of life, but I think you will find him highly entertaining if your sense of humor is anything like the Rev's. Here's Doug Stanhope for you to make you laugh.
But you're still young and pretty and you fucking smell good and you probably shower occasionally, so nothing wrong with you going out and fucking just do it right away. Don't put a lot of fucking thought into it and a lot of fucking Facebook messages. Just go fuck each other and get it out of your system. It's fun, it's nice, but you're wasting so much energy and creativity just trying to fuck when you could. It's not even that good when it's fucking good. Jesus. Have you ever fucked before? It's not bad. It's free fun for poor people. It's way better with narcotics involved. It's not even that good. I'll tell you how fucking ends. If you want to know how fucking ends, this is how every time, if you haven't fucked yet, block your ears. Spoiler alert. I don't want to ruin it for you. But this is how fucking ends every single time it comes to fruition. Blort. That's it. That's how it ends. Every single time, it doesn't matter what she's like or how cool she is or, oh, she was smoking hot. She's like a supermodel. Oh, really? How does that end? Blort. Exactly the same as fat and ugly ends. Wow, she's really smart. She had a PhD in blort. Great. I met her parents. I think this one might be the one, blort. This girl is crazy. She's like a suicide girl. She's all fucking tattooed and she's like does roller derby or something. She's crazy. They tied me down to her massage table with her two friends. And they put a finger in my ass, they put a vibrating latex thing around my cock, and they cranked it, blort. It still is the fucking same. It would be great if sometime it was different, if occasionally one in a fucking thousand. No, this wasn't blort, man. This chick had some crazy trick she learned from the Indians, where right before you come, she smacks you in a special place on your balls with her finger. And instead of coming, what happens? Your entire field of vision fills with neon rainbows coming in and out of focus. And it's a whole, and your entire, all you can hear is cash registers. Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And your cock doesn't do anything, but your asshole opens up like a vomiting baby. And all of your fears come out of you and drift off into the ether. And you go, wow, that'd be worth two tickets to Les Miserables. Sex for the sake of sex is an empty experience. There's nothing fulfilling in just having sex for sex's sake. But if you wait till you find the perfect soulmate, when you can look in that person's eyes and know, this is the one that I was destined to be, blort! It's exactly the same. You're just confusing love and fucking. They're two different products sold separately. When you're in love and you're completely retarded and chemically imbalanced in that beginning stage of love, sure, everything is different. You can read a phone book together and ooh, it's magical. But that wears off and it turns into blur. Sex is the most intimate thing two people can do. No, it's not. Fucking, it's not even intimate. It's certainly not intimate. If you want intimacy, there is a thousand things you'll do in any relationship that are way more intimate than fucking. Bury a pet together. Like that's like a fucking thousand times more intimate. Does this look infected to you? Requires such a higher level of trust, commitment, intimacy. I had a friend, she had breast cancer, and she had a tit cut off, and I had to be there when she got out of the hospital to transition back into her apartment. And I didn't want to be there. I don't like medical shit at all. It grosses me out. I can watch German shit flicks all day long, and I have the stomach for it. Two girls, one cup. No problem. Medical shit? No. And she fell out of bed in a morphine dementia. I had to put her back in bed and redress a fresh mastectomy wound. It was about staples and muscle, fucking about a billion times more intimate than even the most corrupt, reprehensible drug fucking I've done, where you're all fucking on ecstasy and it's you and a bunch of your friends with your chicks. You all end up fucking in the same room together and you're watching each other fuck and no one cares. I'm all wide open. I'm a fucking free spirit. There's a guy in the corner is jacking off the whole time, and it's basically anger jacking. There's no lust in them at all. It's just hate jack. Jesus. And nobody knows who the dude is. At the time, everyone is assuming that dude must be with one of your other friends. And the next day over breakfast, as your fucking serotonin evaporates, you go, who is your friend that was doing you? I thought that was your friend. Was that your friend? Holy fuck, no one knew who that dude was. Turns out he was just some dude at the bar who heard your drug conversation and said, I'm sober enough to drive. You go, oh, we'll go with Kelly's friend then. And you go, we fucked while some transient beat off and watched us. And that's still not even in the same league of intimacy as one fresh mastectomy wound. I didn't look at my friend with cancer and go, wow, that was a very intimate moment where you were at your most vulnerable and I had to come to your aid and overcome my fears, and I feel closer to you than I could ever feel, except for that next step of intimacy that we should take now, that pinnacle of intimacy where I hunch over you with a seahorse posture and I go, wait a minute, Blort. Oh, see that, baby? Look at that. That's the magic of love. That is love coagulating in your belly hairs. This is a physical manifestation of my love for you. Thanks. Why don't next time you just blow your nose in my hair to show me how much I mean to you?
Ladies and gentlemen, Doug Stanhope. You can go to DougStanhope.com. He's got lots of material out there on Amazon, iTunes, live DVD performances. He's even got one on Netflix. Definitely check this guy out and support him. One of the freshest voices in stand-up comedy, in my opinion. And the guy, protecting free speech as far as I'm concerned. That guy's not afraid to say anything. I don't agree even. Yeah, I think, for the rev, but this is a guy who's who he is. You've seen my work. You've seen me on television. You've seen my pictures. You know I am no saint. This guy does stuff that even maybe I don't agree with, but, man, is he hilarious. His delivery's great. Just a fantastic, fantastic stand-up comedian. Everything that is right with comedy. Just go support him. Buy stuff. That's all I've got to say about that. And I hope to feature more stand-up comedy in the future from the Rev's dark and demented comedic genius favorites. But right now, folks, we delve into a fantasy world far away. We take the trip to Gotham City, one of the most vile places in the entire United States and Eastern Seaboard. Infested with crime, there's only one man who can stand up to that adversity, and that is the Batman. Welcome to another edition of TV Casualty, where we take our in-depth look at the DC Comics and Animated Universe, starting with Batman the Animated Series. And now we're in our sixth installment of this. With episode 6, this episode was entitled The Underdwellers. It originally aired October 21st, 1992. A couple of interesting notes. The director was Frank Power, who directed the Doctor Strange, Iron Man, and Hulk versus Marvel animated film features, as well as the X-Men Evolution and Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes animated series, all top-notch animated work. The Sewer King, the villain that we're introduced here, and if I'm not mistaken, actually was created specifically for the animated series. He did not have history in the comics. He was voiced by the late Michael Pataki, the Sewer King. Michael passed last year, actually 2 years ago in 2010. He's a longtime actor, television, animated features. Actually went back to the original Star Trek. He was the Klingon that started the bar fight in the Trouble for Tribbles episode. He was in the old 70s Amazing Spider-Man series. He appeared on My Favorite Martian, The Twilight Zone, later in film, and Easy Rider, and Halloween 4 even. So he was the lead villain and did a great job voicing the Sewer King. The episode, basically, we're in Gotham City. You see a train riding the rails, and it begins. You see two teenagers on the top of the train playing a game of chicken, and the first one who jumps off is, of course, the loser. When one of the teams chickens out, no pun intended, after noticing Batman standing right behind him and scaring the dog shit out of him, the other kid discovers his foot is caught on a cable and he's headed straight towards the tunnel and is going to decapitate him in a bloody massacre. And Batman saves the day and utters a fantastic one-liner that says, "If you play chicken long enough, you'll fry." Oh, Batman's got jokes. Meanwhile, in Gotham City, the battle on the streets, a woman gets mugged by a young boy wearing a tattered green hooded cape. Batman hears the woman reporting to the officer what she believes to have been a leprechaun, and Batman chases after him only to reach a dead end. Back at the Batcave, Bruce feels like he's working too hard, and Alfred finds it hard to believe that he saw a real leprechaun on the streets. Bruce decides, though, he may be overworked and may be hallucinating and seeing little leprechauns just like those folks in Alabama. He decides, no, he's going to pursue it further. He will investigate this case even more. Flash, we go down below the streets in the sewers, under the subway trains, and a man known as the Sewer King has found a group of orphan children, basically a child slavery and trafficking ring, to do chores underground. Basically, all of his hemming, raking, cooking, etc. Then they, of course, would be sent up above ground to steal money and jewelry and other assorted goods for him. One of his more important rules is that the children are to be seen and not heard. They're not allowed to speak. So the children are all afraid of this Sewer King, and they don't want to talk back to him for fear of the back. And they allude to violence. Of course, they're not going to show a grown man beating children on a child's animated television series, but still pushing the envelope for what they were doing at the time very much. Basically tells them if any of them breaks a rule or angers him, then they're threatened with the light, which is just the surface world. But he's built this up to these kids to believe that it is symbolic of the area where people treat them badly. He orders all of the children up into the streets after giving them their reminder of who is in charge. Batman continues his investigation, finds a secret entrance to the sewers, and actually runs into one of the kids in the process, running around down there, frolicking about in the sewers. And, of course, the kid's scared shitless. He runs. Batman saves him from an oncoming train. Now, Batman actually knocked him in front of the oncoming train on accident because he startled him. But, hey, at least, you know, Bat has the conscience. He is a good guy here. Despite his gruff exterior, Batman saves the young man and actually takes him back to Wayne Manor, where he gets Alfred to take care of the child, much to Alfred's dismay, which led myself to ask the question, do you not recall raising Bruce Wayne? But apparently that was a traumatic experience for poor old Alfred, a little more than he had bargained for when agreeing to take on the young Bruce Wayne, and now he's got this orphan kid that Batman has rescued. So the young boy causes Alfred all kinds of grief. He's getting into shit left and right, and Alfred's chasing him like a chicken with his head cut off. Flash down to the Sewer King, and he finds one of the kids is missing, of course, and then he tells all of the little child slaves that he is now going to suspend their food until they find the missing kid. Well, they don't have to go too far because the boy eventually leads Batman through the sewers and to the other children. Batman, being the very smart detective that he is, takes photographs as evidence before rounding up the kids. And then Sewer King arrives with his pretties, which are a giant squad of alligators that I guess he bought at a discount off a farm because he's got a metric fuck ton of them. He sicks the alligators on the Caped Crusader. He even tries to use one of the kids as a hostage, but when his plot fails, he leaves and Batman chases. When the Sewer King falls into the water, all seems lost until the alligators bring him back. He says, "My prickies would not harm me." You actually are led to believe for a moment that he's devoured by the alligators and what Batman calls a gruesome man, meeting a gruesome fate. But the Sewer King has trained the alligators well, and they save him. He continues to flee, only to be jumped by Batman, both falling into the tracks of an oncoming train, where Batman, of course, saves him, although due to special circumstances, he was tempted to leave him there, again alluding to perhaps there's a little more than just a happy army of orphans and child labor, like that they maybe he was abusing. Perhaps there was some sexual abuse there. Maybe I'm implying too much, but certainly he treated him like I would have imagined Batman would treat a pedophile. So pretty interesting scene there, pretty powerful episode. The children, of course, are taken from the police and CPS. Batman watches from a distance with pride, a little bit of sadness in his eyes, knowing these kids, they are rescued from the Sewer King and his evil slavery, slave master clutches, but they have to face the world still as orphans and still in the system. And that ends the show, and yet another great, great episode of Batman the Animated Series, still proving why it is the greatest animated show, the greatest comic-to-screen translation of all time. And we'll be back next week, fans, with another edition of TV Casualty, looking at the next episode of Batman the Animated Series. Got more tunes coming up for you. A friend of the show, Gideon Smith, coming up right now. A song called Born to the Highway off of his new release. Came out late 2011. He came on the show to promote the album. Had a very interesting and lengthy conversation with a rock and roll wizard himself, Gideon Smith. The album was called 30 Weight. You can go to his official website, GideonSmith.com, and purchase your copy. Go to Amazon, go to iTunes, wherever you can get the best deal, man. Gideon will appreciate it. This is true blue American rock and roll. No frills, no sticks, no stems.
Founder of hard rock and heavy metal music, and you mentioned your
your successes, and your all access to Afterlife Pass. What do you think of today's rock music, just by chance? Well, what you played there, that Graveyard and the Gideon Smith, that was pretty good, you know. That was fucking rock and roll, but oh God, what I hear on the radio is total fucking bullocks, man. I mean, what you even got is on the underground, you know. That's still good. It's full of energy and life. But Led Zeppelin, we was the top 40 band, you know. Back the mainstream was still recognizing great music. Now, I mean, does anybody play a fucking instrument anymore? Is it all just done on a bloody computer? Well, I'd have to concur with your points there, John. You mentioned Ronnie James Dio, another, in my opinion, one of the all-time greats. Gone way too soon, tragically taken from us. You tell us how he's doing. Well, yeah, gone way too soon, but come on, mate. Ronnie was a bloody old fop. I was gone too soon. But anyway, he was a good mate. He's good. We were hanging out at Sid Barrett's birthday party, actually, earlier today. It's all day. It was a bloody good time. Talk about greats, man. You know, like Dimebag Darrell was there. Had Jimi Hendrix, Lennon, Randy Rhoads. They was all there. Gigi Allin jumped out of a birthday cake naked and started flinging loads of cack all about. We also made Kurt Cobain cry, but that's another story. That guy's too sensitive. Oh, man, to have been a fly on the wall at that gathering. Well, John, my connection to your realm is going dim here. We only are able to keep our guests for the seance just for a few moments before my spiritual channeling energy runs out. Thank you so much for joining us. Do you have any final remarks?
Yeah, I got one. First of all, you tell Robert and Jimmy and John Paul to get the fuck over it and stop fucking around with whatever bluegrass bullocks they're jacking off with, and get my son Jason, who's a total fucking badass, and get that Zeppelin back together. There's a whole new generation of fans who deserve it, and God knows the music scene these days needs to kick in the arse. And I leave this little nugget. So I asked Kurt Cobain earlier, I says, besides the obvious looks, charm, ability, and success, why is Led Zeppelin better than Nirvana? He says, I don't know. And I says, because it only took one shot to kill you, it took 42 to kill me. Good night, mate. Then live long and prosper, or whatever they fucking nerds say.
Oh, wow. Good night, sir. You're welcome to join us again anytime, ladies and gentlemen. Allegedly now, and I don't want no estates coming after the rev here. I'm a vessel. I am not by any means claiming that this was actually John Bonham. We certainly were delving in the black arts here. We are opening portals to other dimensions. We don't know if these people are always telling the truth, or these entities even. They could be inhuman spirits. As I've mentioned, demons are tricksters, and they like to assume other identities to get a rise. But if that truly was John Bonham, wow, what an interview. Putting me in a good mood before I get pissed off and end the show here with the Rev Fred. It's been a good addition to the Midnight Black Mass. No thanks to Sprint, who I pay good money to every month. And, you know, I'm supposed to have this nationwide coverage. The Rev's a global traveler. You know, I'm on a little layover here, but Rev gets around. I need my coverage, Sprint. And you have never failed me here at the compound, but you failed me many times tonight, and the Rev is not happy. But regardless, we're going to move on with the show. We will finish it out with the Rev's rant. We had a great show tonight. Danny Oley stopped by, special unannounced guest, to discuss year in review for the Hate Junkies and what 2012 holds for him. We had another edition of the Muji Movie Minute. We had TV Casualty looking at Batman, the animated series. And we had a whole lot more, including music, comic news, TV discussion, and everything. A little comedy. We brought a little comedy to the show for only the second time here in the history of the Midnight Black Mass. And I want to keep that going. There's a lot of good comedians out there. Like I say, David Tell, Doug Stanhope, Louis C.K., Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn. These are all guys that really speak to me. So we're going to be featuring more of that stuff here to try to support these guys and get people to go out and buy tickets to their shows, buy their albums, buy their DVDs. I think that's a cause we can all support. And I think one final tune before we go into the Rev's rant, then we're closing out with a tune. But I think this is apropos for the discussion in relation to politics. Song about deception. It's called Believer, originally by Ozzy Osbourne, a classic Ozzy tune. This actually was covered as a tribute to Randy Rhoads' studio sessions Pantera featuring Sebastian Bach of Skid Row on vocals. That is one amazing combination. We're going to bring it to you right here at the show that rocks your balls off, the Midnight Black Mass. And there you have an all-time classic Ozzy Osbourne song off the Diary of a Madman album, Believer, as covered by Pantera with guest vocalist Sebastian Bach. A little hidden nugget there, recorded for a compilation tribute album to Randy Rhoads. What a hard rockin' tune that is, and even spiced up a little bit by Pantera. You got the late, great Dimebag Darrell covering the late, great Randy Rhoads. Don't get no better than that. But fans, it is now time for the Revs Rant. I don't often pull out this segment, but there's times where it needs to be done, and now is one of those as I watch all of my favorite television programs interrupted by stupid political bullshit. I am not a fan of politics. I understand that they're a necessary evil, but they've gotten out of hand in the United States today. They divide families. They divide friends. They turn people who I think are otherwise intelligent, respectable folks into blithering idiots. Look at this, folks. Politics are this. It's a bunch of rich politicians playing Risk with your money. They've already blown it, and I don't know if the system can be fixed. I mean, there's a lot of admirable people out there trying to get things done in a reasonable manner in terms of reforming the system that we got. But Democrat, Republican, does it really matter anymore? Have we not seen that whatever system we have in place is completely incompetent? I think the principles that this country were founded on are great, in terms of the original freedoms. I'm a patriot, in that respect. I ain't trying to cause no sedition or nothing like that. I'm just saying these politicians need to go, man. This is why, honestly, if I vote, I still am up in the air on whether or not I will. But if I do, my vote's going to Ron Paul, not because he's on a Republican ticket, because God knows that's far from me, and I'm not a Democrat either, this guy, he's an independent type of guy, speaks like a human being, I tend to think when these politicians, when the cameras are off, most of them hunker into the shadows like Igor, Victor Frankenstein's assistant. I think some of them are even subhuman. This Ron Paul, he actually talks to people like humans and doesn't talk down to them. He doesn't talk in political jargon. He's got some crazy ideas that system probably never let work, but I guarantee you that's the only guy out there that can make any kind of difference, if a difference can be made. Are the controlling interests of these giant companies just too much, in terms of what's going on Capitol Hill? I just despise politics. They really irk my ass. And to see just like Louis C.K., I talked about him earlier. He has a thing that he describes what stupid people say. And that's how I hear politics on the television. It's blah, 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 abortion, blah, 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 gays in the military, blah, 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 Democrat, blah, 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 Republican, blah, 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 free speech, blah, 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 this, blah, 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 balance the budget. It's just a bunch of random buzzwords. You got these Democrat and Republican talk show hosts who just lampoon one another and say the most ridiculous shit, on the air. These people are, I'm on the fucking internet. I say a lot of ridiculous shit, but guess what? I'm a pro wrestling manager running a radio show trying to get alternative media like heavy metal and horror movies out to people that also enjoy these things and to share this experience as a common fan base. It has nothing to do with any sort of political influence, and I think these guys, they do have influence over stupid people, but, that's, you can't blame them for it either. That's like blaming Ozzy for some kid killing himself because of Suicide Solution. It's retarded. It don't make no sense to the Rev, this whole political mindscape, when you can joke that all politicians are crooked. I mean, even going back to, I just use a reference, the movie Forrest Gump, there's a joke in there about his back was crooked as a politician. This is in the 50s, mind you. So it's commonplace in our society to joke about the fact that politicians are crooked. It's a well-known thing. It's not even a secret. Yet, people still continue to support politicians. Things that fog and baffle the Rev's mind, and I don't claim to be a political expert. As I said, I actually despise the entire realm, but it just blows my mind. Anyway, that's the Rev's rant for this evening. The country's in terrible shape, and somebody needs to take some damn responsibility is all I'm saying. All of this finger point back and forth between these two political parties ain't getting jack diddly dog shit done. And, you know, our children deserve better than that. Our grandchildren deserve better than that. You know, we don't subscribe to the Mayan theory of the 2012 apocalypse. As I said last week, I think the Mayans just got tired of writing a calendar and ended it. You know, I think it's pretty preposterous. You know, not to say the world couldn't end with a nuclear holocaust because of all of this war in the world, but... you know, let's hope cooler heads prevail as they have since the 40s when we were actually the last ones to use the nukes on the Japanese. But anyway, beside the point, you know, the peace, love, and hard liquor and all that, to each and every one of you, the Rev appreciates your support, and I appreciate you sticking with me here on the Midnight Black Mass tonight through technical difficulties, but I've been hard at work for you fans. I've been hard at work for my listenership. We've got a lot of different variety of guests lined up from a lot of different fields. You're going to be really excited about them. Again, thank you for your support. I say it again, keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold, and I'll see you in hell. This has been the Rev for another edition of the Midnight Black Mass. And to lead you out, here's a little unspoken triumph. With Decade of Progression.
I see with my spin on this that you are shrouded.
Yes, I'm just a magnet of our own creation.
You poor ingredients not to conquer the masses.
Despite my highest ambitions for creation.
The good I instruct me, self-induced hypnosis.
The rich you are.
Just suck.
for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.